afternoon and welcome to your own health and fitness talk show. I'm health integration specialist Lena Berman, and I'm here live with you every Tuesday at 2 p.m. talking to you about healthcare and fitness trends and taking your phone calls. Boy, do we have an exciting show for you today. This is going to be a real good one. Today's show is an interview with physician Dr. Jonathan Wright, who has written a new book called Natural Hormone Replacement with some help from John Mergenthaler. I'll be opening up the phone lines probably around 2:40 for everybody within our area code or outside of our area code. The number is the same. It's 510-848-6767, and I'll repeat that number when we're ready to go to calls. We're going to be a little jammed up with calls, so just be patient. If you're getting through with a ring, it means just hang on and we'll eventually get to you. For those who may want to get a tape of today's show or need to get in touch with me during the week, you can call me during normal business hours. And that number is 707-769-1458. I'll repeat that at the end of the show. Let me very quickly get right to my guest. Incidentally, the most famous thing about Jonathan Wright and the way he's been sort of mentioned on the show in the past is when we did a show about the FDA. Jonathan Wright was one of the people who was invaded by the FDA. You know, they sort of showed up and sort of took terrible substances like vitamin B out of his office. Dr. Wright, are you with us? Dr. Wright, are you there? Hello?
Ah, now I can hear you.
Okay. We just had a momentary delay on our switch there. I was just talking about your FDA experience, but let me just quickly give you an intro for people who are not. Most people know who you are, but let's enlighten some of the ones who don't. Jonathan Wright is the best-selling author of Dr. Wright's Guide to Healing with Nutrition and Dr. Wright's Book of Nutritional Therapy. He's medical director of the Tahoma Clinic in Kent, Washington, and has treated over 2,000 women with natural hormone replacement since 1982. He's also been a monthly medical columnist for Prevention Magazine and also Let's Live, and has been teaching, along with Dr. Gaby, some nutritional therapy in medical practice, which is a four-day intensive seminar for healthcare practitioners since 82. So he's well known to people in the field, and hopefully at the end of the show, well known and well loved by the rest of you, because he has some interesting good news for us. First of all, I'd like to have people know what happened to you with the FDA. It's such an astonishing story. Do you want to tell a quickie about the FDA?
Well, if you insist.
Oh gosh.
That sort of thing we try to forget and go ahead with what we're supposed to be doing, namely helping folks with their health.
Are they letting you go ahead?
As far as we can tell. Now, of course, for 6 months or so prior to the armed invasion, they actually had spies going through our garbage, and they were sending phony patients through the clinic and things like that. And we have proof of that from their own words on an affidavit which they filed with a judge. So who knows if they're doing that again? We seem to have a variety of agencies of government that feel it necessary to do that sort of thing. But right now, they're not overtly doing anything.
So what did they do to you guys?
Well, do you happen to recall back in 1989 and 1990, there was an episode where tryptophan supplements were contaminated?
Oh, of course, yes.
And 38 people died, and of course, those were taken right off the market, just like any other contaminated product. Well, within a couple of years, the contaminant had been identified, and it was identified by no less prestigious an institution than the Mayo Clinic.
Mm.
Well, Mayo identified what it was, and the observation was made that no one in Australia or New Zealand or Great Britain or anywhere else beside the States had died from this tryptophan contamination. So it was thought that if pure tryptophan were used, it wouldn't be a problem. And of course, we had a clue to that because it had been sold in health food stores for 20 years without a problem either. Once the contamination was identified, we started working with an uncontaminated lot of tryptophan again. We knew it was uncontaminated because we sent it off to get analyzed for the contaminant, and it was not found. We worked with it only for people who had severe depression, suicidal depression. It's really helpful for some people with suicidal depression. And we were working with it in 1991. We kept it under very careful control, only let it out on a doctor's say-so, and kept track of everyone who was taking it just in case there was a problem. And in 1991, in marches an FDA agent with someone from the State Board of Pharmacy, when I was out of town, by the way. Mm. And basically they intimidated some of the personnel into giving them all of the tryptophan. Now, I say intimidated because the tryptophan recall was totally voluntary. A former FDA commissioner, David Kessler, testified to that fact before Congress in June of 1993. He was asking for more power and saying, look, we had to recall that tryptophan on a voluntary basis, as if he didn't expect everybody to cooperate. But they intimidated us, our personnel, when I was out of town, into giving it up. I got back, found out that they'd been intimidated by the FDA guy. I called our attorney and said, hey, that wasn't legal what they did, was it? And he says, no, that was a voluntary recall, not a mandatory. And besides, you've sent yours off for testing. It wasn't contaminated. You're working with it safely. That was an illegal act. And I said, well, what'll we do about it? And he said, well, you're going to have to sue him to get it back. And by the way, how much is that tryptophan worth? Well, we had 103 bottles or something, and they're $15 a piece. Technically, it's worth $1,500. Now, to people with suicidal depression, if they can't get it, they can't swallow dollar bills. They need tryptophan. So we thought for a little while and sued them to get it back. I bring that up because within 2 weeks of us filing suit against them, they started going through the garbage outside of our clinic.
Right. They don't like to be sued.
No. Sending agents through our clinic. How do we know this? Again, they wrote it themselves and filed it with the judge when they were telling how terrible we were, that they should come raid us. So we know that. And so we sued them, and they spent the whole winter in Seattle going through our garbage. Can you imagine going through the garbage outdoors in a Seattle rain?
Well, and I'm glad that our tax dollars are being used well. Also, let's not. I don't want to take too much time away from the good news.
No, okay. Well, then after that, following all this investigation in May of 1992, on May 6th, just before the clinic was ready to open, and all of our personnel were inside doing the things they do to get ready for the day, the doors came bursting open, and in come running a group of FDA agents and King County police. They told the police we were running a drug house. They did, and three of them had their six guns or whatever they used drawn, and they pointed at our clinic personnel and yelled, raid, raid, this is a raid, just like on an episode of Cops. And as you say, they then presented a search warrant, and they arrested our B vitamins.
Well, you know, I have to say, Jonathan, that you sound really scary to me. I mean, I'm glad that the government is going after you, because I'm afraid of you. Oh, God, let's move on to the good news. I'm so sorry that happened to you. You're so undeserving.
Well, it certainly does break up your average day, you know.
Yeah, it's not good. It's not good. You know, people listening to this show, if they've been listening consistently, have heard me several times interview people about natural hormones. But John Lee's been on the show three times.
Oh, good.
Times. Yeah. But, you know, it seems to me that if we can do it very briefly, we ought to explain why we call some hormones synthetic and why we call some natural. And then we'll sort of unpack that and talk about, you know, Premarin a little bit. First of all, just for those who haven't heard this, briefly, why are we calling some of them natural and some synthetic?
Sure. The ones that are called natural are the ones that are identical to the ones that our own bodies make. So if we wanted to use the ink and paper, we would be saying either identical to natural, or we would be saying natural as made in the body, because certainly horse hormones are made by horses, and horses are natural, so those are natural hormones too, but in this context, they are natural for horses, horse hormones are, and that's very different from the hormones that are natural to humans, specifically to women, although men do have some estrogen too. Good thing we do, or we wouldn't understand each other. So natural means identical to what's in our bodies. Now, the reason I'm saying identical to is because pretty obviously we're not going to go extract estrogen from one woman and give it to another so that it would be human in its origin. What very clever biochemists are able to do these days is to take precursors, molecules that are found in both soy and in a giant yam, and chemically change them so that they are identical in every way, size, shape, molecular structure, molecular activity, and so forth, to what goes in the human body. An analogy to that is that these days, if we're diabetic and we're injecting insulin, we're usually using human insulin. Does that come from another human? No. It comes from genetically recombinant engineered bacteria, which have been persuaded somehow to turn out insulin that is precisely identical to human insulin. Well, it's an analogy, and what biochemists turn out are molecules that are precisely identical to human estrogens, although they did not originate in a woman's ovaries.
Okay, but the problem here is that if a pharmaceutical company wants to own this formula and they want it to be theirs and they want to patent it, what funny little thing do they do to things like progesterone?
Well, you're quite right. That's a problem, but only for the pharmaceutical company.
Well, it's a problem for us, too, isn't it?
Well, because they've persuaded all of the doctors to prescribe it, then it does become a personal...
No, but I mean they've done something in order to patent it, and I'm asking you to
Absolutely
tell people
right.
what they did.
In order to patent it, a molecule that's exactly identical to what's found in nature can't be patented. The law doesn't allow for that. It has to be different from what's found
that's
in nature.
Very important.
And so what they do is to add a methyl group over here, a couple of a carbon molecule with three hydrogens, or they'll add another side chain, as the chemists will call it. They'll add other molecules to the natural hormones so that it makes a molecule which was never, ever seen in nature before, or in fact, on this planet before, and yet it is close enough to the human that it sort of works like the human hormone. But, unfortunately, that's just a sort of. It doesn't work identically, and so it also causes a wide variety of problems. It's as if we had a key which fits into a lock, but one bump is milled a little wrong, and so the lock won't turn, and so we take a peep at these pliers, and we force that key to turn.
Mm-hmm.
What have we done to the lock? Well, we've messed up the inner workings of the lock, and that's what one of these patented pharmaceutical company molecules does to our hormone receptors.
The two most commonly prescribed hormones, as you've said here, are the horse-derived estrogens, which is Premarin from horse urine, and then we've got progesterone. So we've got two separate problems here. The progesterones are synthesized progesterones. And
totally synthesized.
Yeah, so the body goes, what the heck? You know, so that's weird. But as you were pointing out, the horse estrogens have other estrogens in them. I mean, one of the things people need to understand here is that estrogens is a group, and there are three main human estrogens. And what we get with Premarin is an extra added one, which
yes,
is the horse estrogen.
Yes, found in humans. It's called Equilin because, of course, it comes from horses.
Right. Okay, so part of what we've said here is that there's synthetic hormones, and then there are other hormones which are natural because the way that they've been produced
right.
is exactly like the ones in the body. Not that you're taking a yam and smearing it on your body, but that you are synthesizing in the lab from a precursor material this hormone, but you're not changing it so that you can make more money off of it.
Correct.
Okay. Now, we have three estrogens in the body. Why don't you explain that situation to us?
Sure. Normal ovaries make estrone. Sometimes it's abbreviated E1, and estradiol, which is sometimes abbreviated E2, and estriol, which naturally would be called E3. Now, normal ovaries make better than 80% of estriol, E3, and less than 20% of the other two, estradiol and estrone. And in the pattern of nature here, it's a good thing that normal ovaries do that because estriol, or E3, is anti-carcinogenic.
Very important point here.
And it helps to prevent cancers, and the only time it does not do that is when it's misused.
Mm-hmm.
And if you want to, we'll get to the misuse of it. Estradiol and estrone are pro-carcinogenic, and they can induce cancers. So, as I was implying there, if we have a majority of anti-carcinogenic estrogen and a minority of pro-carcinogenic estrogen, then the balance says we're balanced away from getting a cancer that's associated with those estrogens.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what normal ovaries do. Now, we do run lots of tests for women after and before menopause, and we certainly do run into women well before menopause where something has gone wrong and there is less than 50% of the estriol, and there's actually a predominance of the estrone and estradiol, which are pro-carcinogenic, Probably that has something to do with the metabolism of the estrogens, because actually the principal one produced by ovaries is estradiol, but then that's the procarcinogenic one called E2, but that's promptly metabolized into the E3. Well, some people don't do that metabolic step very well.
Right.
One of the things noted in the book is that daughters of women who have had breast cancer have been checked in a fairly good-sized study, and the daughters of women who had breast cancer had proportionately less of the estriol than daughters of women who don't have breast cancer, remembering that the estriol is the anticarcinogenic one. Other research has shown that women in Asia, particularly those on a native Asian diet, or at least close to it, have a much higher proportion of estriol, the anticarcinogenic one, both before and after the menopause, than women here in the northern part of North America do, who have less estriol. So that sort of what might be called epidemiologic evidence points to the fact that if we have more estriol running around in our systems, which is the way that most women who are metabolizing properly do, that our balance is tilted away from estrogen-related cancers.
Yeah, now, one of the things, just to back up so that we can frame this and move on, is just to say very simply that what we've learned is that, you know, we've had a lot of people recently go, oh no, we can't give women replacement hormones. It's very dangerous. Estrogen is very dangerous, and women also are showing up estrogen dominant. We've been using natural progesterone, and that helps. But
right.
Then there are women who are starting to get older and really getting into menopause that are flashing like crazy and having terrible symptoms, and they're afraid to use estrogen because estrogen is supposed to be tumor-promoting. But what we found out, partially through the studies you cite in your book and also through the good work of Dr. Henry Lemon, who did a variety of breast cancer studies that showed up a lot of what you've just been talking about, we've learned that estriol of the cancer of the of the estrogens that we make, we do make an estrogen. Estriol, I think I've just said that in a skewed way, but anyway, estriol is not only not tumor-promoting, but it can be protective, particularly of the breast, and doesn't seem to promote tumors. Just very briefly, for people who are just tuning in, this is on Pacifica, Your Own Health and Fitness, and I am talking on the phone with the author of Natural Hormone Replacement. It's Dr. Jonathan Wright, and I'm Health Integration Specialist Lena Berman. Now, one of the other things that's interesting, because we'll get into the progesterone and the replacing progesterone, what happens here, but one of the things that you've just mentioned is this business of women. Some women are lower in estriol. Some
yeah.
women are not only estrogen. Some women have too much estrogen altogether, and that's something that's interesting to note about women. And then some women have not enough estriol. Now, you mentioned Asian women in their diet, but I was just talking to you very briefly before we started the show about another group of studies that are coming out done by Herco Cavalieri, who's a professor at Epley Cancer Research Institute at the University of Nebraska. And I'm privy to this because Dr. David Zava, who's been on the show, is working on a book and has been talking to Cavalieri. One of the things that we just found out that's very exciting is that one of the reasons that estrogen by itself doesn't cause cancer, but when they metabolize, in other words, when you're processing the estrogen in your body, we have something called metabolites that occur. And when estrogens metabolize, they can form something called the 4-catechol estrogens. And in women who can process and methylate these and eliminate them out of their bodies well, it's not a problem. Like Asian women methylate really, really well. So they eliminate these things well. If they're not eliminated, they can become oxidized like the free radicals that we get from burning vegetable oils and other things that are bad for us. Then it moves on and becomes another substance, which is a highly activated substance, which binds to DNA, which causes mutations that can lead to cancer. So the ways that we avoid those things, you know, what enhances this kind of oxidation is going to be part of what we talked about, which is women who tend to have lower amounts of estriol in relationship to everything else, but also people who are exposed to environmental pollutants, women who have too much estrogen in general, and women and people who use trans fatty acids and oxidized polyunsaturated vegetable oils. What's protective is what we were talking about with diet. It's partly your genetics, but it's also eating a lot of the sort of coal vegetables, cooked coal vegetables, using natural progesterone, which prevents the enzymes from moving on to these bad substances, or at least substances which can oxidize, reducing estrogens in general so that you're enhancing the methylation, using vitamins like the B vitamins, B12 and folic acid, and eating garlic, which is a sulfur-containing aminos, and then the use of estriol. So, I'm sorry, I just said way too much. I'm going to let you talk now. But I want to ask you, since we've also got, we need to protect women who maybe didn't have kids who might have less estriol, why can't we just use estriol?
We certainly can, and if one is working with a doctor on an individualized basis for oneself, it's perfectly possible to do urine tests, 24-hour urine, which is the test I happen to prefer. I think it's most accurate, that tells us about the three estrogens, their proportions to each other, and how much is turning into estriol. Or we could use a blood test if we want to and check the three different estrogens. Although, as I say, I like the urine test better. And if we find that we have this predominance of estrone and estradiol, which some women do, and aren't metabolizing over into estriol, then we could say, oh, let's just go ahead with estriol. We don't need those other two.
Isn't that what they're doing in Europe, is just using estriol?
In Europe, many studies are just using estriol. I should say many practitioners, and many studies are going on which are just using estriol. Now, it's been pointed out, though, that there is very, very little in the body that doesn't have a reason. Even appendixes are slowly being found to have an immune function. And yes, they do go bad, but they even seem to have a function. And estrone and estradiol are the original, estradiol being more, I should have just said estradiol is the original estrogen that is put out, and then it's metabolized into the estriol and somewhat the estrone. And there's got to be a reason for that. It's been found, for example, that estradiol is the principal one of the estrogens that, even though it's procarcinogenic, has more to do at puberty with the development of so-called secondary sexual characteristics, breasts, hips, and the characteristic body shape, than the other two estrogens do. So there's a very clear reason. Now, of course, after menopause, nobody's going through puberty anymore, but some folks do want to maintain as not only much heart protection, bone protection, brain protection as they can get, but also some just general retarding of body degenerative processes as they can.
So I think what I hear you saying is that in your experience working with the triestrogen cream, a woman who has a history in her family of breast cancer, or maybe a lot of cancer in the family, may want to try estriol first. That you agree with, yes?
Well, I'd have to agree with that. And when folks come in and have that history of cancer, I'll want them to get their estrogens checked very particularly. And then most of the time, I'll want to use estriol. Again, given that there's reasons for these other estrogens, until somebody proves to me that as a general rule, we should never use estradiol and estrone, I'm going to just copy what nature does. Natural medicine isn't all that difficult. Most of the time, if we follow one rule, and that is, let's figure out exactly how nature does it, and then let's copy that.
Yeah, the only problem with that is what nature does is make our hormones go away. So we're already sort
You're
of
right,
cheating
it does do
a little,
that.
Aren't we? I guess what I've heard from practitioners is that estriol does seem safer, so they start with estriol, but not all women, I mean, even granted, you can do the tests, there's saliva tests and urine tests, and you can see where you are, but not all women who have invasive symptoms will find relief with estriol. So
that's another problem. Estriol will not stop hot flashes in 100% of women who have hot flashes, for example.
Okay. Now, I'm not even going down this road because we're running out of time of why replace, because I think we've seen so much stuff in the media about why you want to replace these things, but the danger has been what's been so scary, and part of what we're saying is that the natural estrogens are less problematic, is certainly when there's more estriol, but the thing that really saves your butt, forgive me, when you're using replacement hormones, is the use of natural progesterone.
Absolutely. Okay. The artificial progesterone removes much of the protection that even horse estrogen gives people for such things as the heart and for such things as the cholesterol levels. There's clear evidence on that, that folks who take horse estrogen, forgive us here, and have an improvement in their good cholesterol, the HDL cholesterol, when they're put onto this synthetic progesterone, which is called Provera by trade name or medroxyprogesterone by generic name, that those good cholesterols just disappear, even if they continue to take their horse estrogen. And other experimenters have found that when working with women who are exercised on treadmills, that, again, women who are given horse estrogen have better results on their treadmill test, but when they're given that Provera stuff, the medroxyprogesterone, their better results disappear again. Mm-hmm. Well, fortunately, even in mainstream medicine, they're getting around to using natural progesterone. Maybe they've been listening to Dr. Lee. Mm. And when they use the horse estrogen, which, of course, I'm saying they shouldn't, but they do, and they use natural progesterone, then the good cholesterol does not disappear, and the improvement on the treadmill exercise does not disappear. There's very clear difference. Provera or medroxyprogesterone, the artificial progesterone, has actually been labeled by two groups of researchers a dangerous drug.
Yeah. No, I think you're right. And we need to break for a second. We're taking a brief musical break. But there's also Hernsmeyer's heart study that showed that Provera did not work at protecting from heart attack, from vasospasm, and natural progesterone did. So we're going to take just a 30-second break here. And then when we come back, I'll be talking some more with Dr. Jonathan Wright, author of Natural Hormone Replacement. This is health integration specialist Lena Berman on Your Own Health and Fitness. We'll be right back.
Olha que coisa mais linda, mais cheia, coisa mais linda que eu já vi passar. Ah, por que estou tão sozinho?
Welcome back. This is Your Own Health and Fitness on Pacifica. I'm health integration specialist Lena Berman, and I'm on the phone with Dr. Jonathan Wright, physician and author of Natural Hormone Replacement, which is available through Smart Publications. And I'll give out why don't we do that after we talk a little bit more? I'll give out some numbers for you. But Natural Hormone Replacement. We've been talking about we sort of took estrogen apart quite a bit and then talked about the use of natural progesterone. Now estrogen. Here I am rushing because I want to get through all this information. I'm sorry. The difference between natural and synthetic progesterone and the fact that progesterone is protective when you use estrogen, if you're really using natural progesterone, not synthetic, the possible danger of using estrogen, which is reduced with natural estrogen, is almost completely eliminated by the use of natural progesterone in concert.
Correct. One of the problems is that the pharmaceutical companies have really smeared or blurred the definition of the meaning of the word estrogen and the word progesterone, and they include under those definitions all of these artificial and horse molecules. And so when women say, well, I've heard that estrogen causes extra cancers, they're completely correct, except they're talking about horse estrogen, and the pharmaceutical companies haven't made that distinction.
Yeah. You know, another thing that's a little daunting, I just found out recently that when you synthesize these hormones, when you change the molecular structure slightly to patent them, one of the things that the pharmaceutical companies do is when they make birth control pills, the substance that they're changing it to, my understanding is that the formula is very, very close to an androgen, to a male hormone. And in fact, a lot of the side effects and problems and health problems that women have with birth control pills is due to the fact that these are androgenic.
Well, there's that too.
Along with some million other things, huh?
We really do want to stick with molecules that are identical to what go in our bodies.
Mm-hmm.
We can lay odds much higher than the house odds in Las Vegas that if we use a molecule that does not participate in the normal function of the body, that it's going to cause a lot of trouble.
Yeah, I know. All right, well, you know what? There are other hormones in the body that change as we get older.
For sure.
One thing that I did think of is that it strikes me, well, I think we said it, if a woman has a history of cancer in her family, it might be prudent for her to test before she starts supplementing, maybe to see what kind, partially to see whether she's estrogen dominant before
right.
she starts taking hormones. And then also, because it gets confusing, the symptoms are confusing, not everybody knows. I guess basically, if you're really low in estrogen, you're hot flashing. That's pretty clear.
Right.
But the other thing is then to see what the ratio is. And then the other thing is that there are these other hormones. So we have DHEA and we have testosterone and stuff like that. And you're saying in this book, maybe we should raise those levels a little.
Oh, certainly. If we're going to replace hormones at all, and as you pointed out, there's some argument about that, and we won't get into that one here, but if we are going to raise those hormones at all, it's wisest to raise all of them and do it more or less in concert rather than having one hormone play solo. So we want to raise the identical to natural estrogens, the progesterone, and the DHEA at a minimum. Now, some women, their bodies will metabolize sufficient DHEA into mm-hmm. testosterone to raise their levels to a good level for a normal woman's test. Other women, though, apparently their metabolism hasn't read the textbook that says that this ought to happen, and they'll take DHEA, and their testosterone levels won't change at all. And if they're too low to start with, it's a very wise idea to at least bring them up to low normal range for women. Again, we certainly don't want to get into the male range, but testosterone is an extremely important hormone in small quantities for women. For example, we all know that testosterone builds muscles. I've worked with women, particularly in their late 70s and 80s, who've had congestive heart failure. Heart's a big muscle, right? And they've done everything they can to get that heart to work better, including some of the drugs and the natural substances and so forth, and they're still not doing as well as they want. We'll test them, find out their testosterone level is nearly zero, and we'll bring in a little bit of testosterone, a woman's normal level, and the heart muscle starts working better.
Yeah.
Well, of course it does. The heart's a big muscle. The second thing is, if we think about it, when we all get to be 90, those of us who have survived to 90 or 95, if we are men, we have preserved our muscle mass better than women. And not to be disrespectful at all, but there is a term in the culture called little old lady, and we don't hear that term about men so much. We hear a different term.
Oh, it depends on who you're talking
and
to.
Both those terms have to do with testosterone, don't they?
Yeah.
With men, it's one term.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
Yeah.
Yes.
And with women, it's feeble. It's not strong.
Right.
It's unable to lift things. Well,
what we're really saying is that if women continue to have a little bit of circulating testosterone in their bloodstream, they can also chase after the male person.
There you go.
Yeah.
You said that very cleanly and politely.
Yeah. So one of the deals here is that I really want to make something clear, and you make it clear. You say it over and over in the book. Get your levels tested.
Yes.
Get your levels tested. So I want to talk a little bit about the testing, because, you know, and then let me back up one bit. I do this a lot. Before we go to testing, DHEA, this business of, you know, dosages on hormones is absolutely critical, because there's been a lot of criticism, for instance, of natural progesterone cream. A lot of women who are perimenopausal have lost their progesterone before the estrogen drops.
Right.
And they start using natural progesterone cream. Well, there's a whole bunch of people in the field, allopathic type docs, who are saying, no, if you take progesterone, it makes you depressed, it does this, it does that. Well, if you take too much, if you take too much of any of these hormones, it makes you sick. It's very simple,
correct.
You know, but people don't get it. So they like to push against each other. They like to be opposed. So they like to be tested. One concern I had is a lot of people who talk about DHEA are talking about bringing the levels up to the level of a 20-year-old. Are we trying to replace all of our hormones to the level of a 20-year-old?
I don't think that's wise.
Yeah, I don't think so either. I just think that if you're dropping and you're low, then maybe you bring it up to something around normal for your age, or maybe...
Usually, I'll be shooting for a level of the late 30s or early 40s. I think our bodies are able to withstand that and to maintain it a lot better than those so-called raging hormones of the teens
and
20s.
Yeah, no, thank you. God, no, don't. I want to go back. Do not want to go back. Okay, testing. You like blood, and we've talked a lot about saliva testing. My understanding was that the advantage to the saliva is that it's nice to know what's active in the tissues, not just what's being metabolized and excreted.
Well, yes, that would be nice to know, but even saliva doesn't tell us that. The only way we would know what's active in the tissues is to be able to get something called an intracellular probe, that, and those, by the way, have been designed and they're used in very, very high-tech research, where the tip of the probe can go actually within a single cell and find out what's in there and what's going on. Urine is an excretory product, so is saliva, in a manner
well,
of speaking.
Yeah, except that my understanding is that what leaves the blood, about 1 to 2%, goes into the tissues, and that also goes into the saliva, so
well,
that you'll get a similar...
Well, yes and no. Saliva concentrates certain hormones far and away more than it concentrates others. Progesterone is notorious for concentrating in saliva. No one knows why. And also testosterone behaves weird in saliva. There's a book out there put out by the New York Academy of Sciences called Salivary Diagnostics, and they say in there, for example, that there's absolutely no correlation at all between the levels of salivary DHEA and the levels of blood DHEA. So who's to say which is accurate and which isn't when there's totally no correlation?
There's
and
no
again,
correlation.
This is in
it's
a
true.
Book by New York Academy of Sciences. I'm more conservative in this. For years, the standard of testing steroid hormones, and these are steroid hormones, the word steroid is not a bad word, only when it's perverted and turned into street steroids does it give it causes harm. The steroids that are in our bodies belong there. Estrogen's a steroid. All the estrogens are, so is testosterone. Anyway, for years, the standard for checking steroids hormones has been a 24-hour urine collection because that collects all of the steroid that is outputted in the 24 hours. Blood tests, for example, have one particular error that can happen, and that is that steroid hormones are secreted in bursts. The body will secrete a little bit for a few seconds or a minute or two, and then it will quit for a while, and then it'll make a little more and quit. So depending on where we get that blood test, we could be at the top of a burst or we could be with no burst, and the urine gets around that. Now, certainly there are problems with 24-hour urine tests, such as if it wasn't collected accurately, that'll be a problem. And the really picky clinicians, who on occasion include me, will do both a blood test and a urine test just to see what's happening. But ordinarily, I like to use the 24-hour urine test. Now, just for full disclosure purposes, after studying all of this, saliva, blood, urine, all of that, and deciding that, well, I thought I'd go with the 24-hour urine because that's what the data showed me, I approached the lab that I consult for. I do consult for a clinical lab and asked them, can you please do this in a 24-hour urine test? After several years of research, they were able to get it exactly right in a 24-hour urine test, and I do consult for that lab. So am I biased? Well, I do consult for the lab, but on the other hand, I'm the one who did all the reading and research and asked them to do it. So
okay.
That's where we are.
Well, just to balance it a little bit, because we do have several labs, some of them close to us, that
of
do,
course,
do the saliva.
Is a good one for saliva testing.
So just to give people sort of, they can make their own minds up.
Absolutely.
My understanding is that what happens, the reason you're getting higher levels of hormones in the saliva is particularly with progesterone. Progesterone, when you try to take it in blood, you're taking a blood serum, which means you're spinning the red cells out, and you're basically spinning the progesterone out. And this has been one of the reasons people have overprescribed progesterone, is they do a blood test and you can't tell from the blood how much progesterone is there, because you get much higher levels in the saliva because it seems to be more accurate. So I just think, you know, probably both systems are good, and I think people will just have to decide for themselves. And you do list in your book Natural Hormone Replacement where to go for the lab that you're working with. A couple of brief things before I open up the phone lines. Dr. Lee, yeah, I'm still there. Dr. Lee has been on the show, and we've talked endlessly about the fact that hormones are best used transdermally, not in a pill through the liver, and even the micronized stuff under the tongue tends to cause such a spike of hormones that people get a kind of bad reaction to that. So do you agree that through the skin is the way to go?
That's what I prescribe the most of. There are some women who would prefer not to do that, and the ones who don't, I'll prescribe capsules for them, and then we just monitor levels and see where they are. I want to underline something you just said a couple paragraphs ago, though, and that is that there is not one settled path to doing all this, and anyone's best bet is to find a physician who is knowledgeable about all this.
Which is
works
very difficult
time,
to do.
Not just does it occasionally.
Yeah, but it's very hard to find a physician who does this.
Well, in the back of the book, I've got two sources, two phone numbers. One is for the American Academy of Naturopathic Medicine. I should say American Association of Naturopathic Physicians. I'm sorry. And the other one's for the American College of Advancement in Medicine. And people who are members of those two groups know very well how to work with these
mm-hmm.
hormones. So people could call those numbers for referral. Find a physician who is knowledgeable. It's harder than finding a general physician, you're right. And work with them and go back and forth and report how you're feeling as you're working along, and you'll probably get it right.
Okay, and then the other thing about all of this is that along with finding a good doctor, the other thing is that most of these preparations are produced, there are some over-the-counter products. Progesterone is available over-the-counter.
And DHEA is in little capsules.
Yeah, but again, it would be nice to get through the skin. There are some
That's
companies.
Right.
But the other thing is that you talk about compounding pharmacies, which are a great resource. And you know, the thing I think about here is we talk about what's holding up. You know, everyone in the field is talking about what's holding up testing and FDA approval of natural hormones. My feeling is we're better off if they don't approve them because we may be able to get them over-the-counter. I mean, I think, for instance, don't you think that estriol should be available over-the-counter?
No. In general, I would like everything that is not a narcotic or a hard drug to be available over-the-counter as it was before 1938. One of the enormous increases in the cost of medical care has been that in order to get an ordinary prescription for an ordinary non-narcotic, you have to go see a doctor and ask him, and so you have to pay the doctor visit plus the prescription. You may know that in Mexico, where hard narcotics are also not available over the counter, everything else is. And folks who know which medications help them can just walk into the store and buy their whatever their medication is, including estriol or digitalis or whatever. And studies have been done showing that there are no excess deaths in Mexico by allowing people to buy their own stuff rather than have to have a prescription. So philosophically, I'm with you. The difficulty is that we just don't educate our kids in such things as hormones. In health education class in high school, we learn how to put condoms on bananas, but there is not one graduate of a high school health education class who could name the three estrogens for you.
Yeah, I know. We've got to move on because we've got callers calling, and I have two more quick things I want to get out of here because, I want to get out into the show here. I want to also remind people that some women need thyroid, and some women need thyroid, particularly around menopause. So that's another thing to check. And women who are on thyroid need to be very careful about DHEA supplementation. It has to go very slowly because it potentiates the activity of thyroid medications. So
right.
No, you, all of a sudden you're going, woo, I'm very hyperthyroid. The other question, and this is my last question, and then the people are just calling in. They're not even waiting for the number, is women who take thyroid medication feel better when they take progesterone 26 days out of the month. Did you hear what I asked? They're taking it straight through 26 days instead of 14 days or 12 days. Do you see a problem with that as long as they go off it for a week?
The key thing is going off any of these hormones, with the exception of DHEA, going off any of them for a week. That is the key thing because that's what our bodies do for all those years prior to menopause. And if we try to override that, we definitely are going to get into trouble.
Okay. All right.
So if we go off it that week, then I'm going to have less of a debate with the people who want 14 days versus 26 days.
Okay, that sounds good. All right. Well, for those of you who have been patient enough to wait, I'll give out the number, although all of the lines are blinking, so you have to be patient. We only have three lines. The number to call in is 510-848-4425. No matter where you're calling from, it's 510-848-4425. Be patient. It's Health Integration Specialist Lena Berman with Jonathan Wright, Natural Hormone Replacement. Let's move to Ann in Emeryville. Go ahead, Ann.
Thank you very much. I am 65 years old, so I assume I am postmenopausal. Between 1983 and 1996, which is age 51 to something 64, I took the Premarin and Provera, and then I found out it was bad for you, so I stopped abruptly. Now, stopping abruptly was unwise. I'm getting hot flashes day and night. They're driving me crazy, and I don't know what to do now. I am taking Remifemin. Remifemin. It's from Germany, and it's supposed to be very good black cohosh standardized, but it's not helping. So,
Dr. Wright?
I don't know if we've lost the doctor.
Dr. Wright, are you still there? I think we've lost Dr. Wright, guys. Yeah, that's what I thought. All right. Okay, what we're going to have to do is... Have we lost him, guys? We have lost him. Okay. What I'm going to have to do is, can we put the caller on hold and I can... Hello, guys? Can I put the caller on hold and we can play a little music and try to get Dr. Wright back on the line? Okay, so hold on, Anne, and we'll try to get Dr. Right on the line. Let's just play some music while I'm trying to do that so you're not bored to death. So this is Your Own Health and Fitness on Pacifica. Hold on. We'll be right back. Welcome back. We're unfortunately having some technical problems. I'm really sorry about this. But let me see if I can answer some of these questions myself. Anne, you still there, Anne in Emeryville? Do we still have Anne in Emeryville? Okay, let's move on to David. I'm really sorry about this, guys. We're just having some technical problems. David? Hello, David.
Hi, this is not David.
Okay, who have we got on the line now? Go ahead, who are you? Hello? Okay, do we have a caller that we can patch through here? Do we not have any callers? Okay. If I see a line blinking, why don't we try that first caller? Go ahead, please. You're on the air.
David, my cellular connection failed.
Aha. Well, I will have to try to answer your question, but I may be able to do that. Go ahead, please.
Okay. Well, my question is, to what extent can menopause-related bone demineralization be...
I'm sorry, menopause what?
Menopause-related demineralization of bone be corrected or reversed with hormone exposure?
Oh, good question. Okay, this is something we didn't have time to cover. The thing that's kind of interesting is that estrogen has gotten all the press about how it fixes bones. Really what happens is that, first of all of the studies that they did about estrogen, it was always estrogen and progesterone together, and they never discussed the bone-building effects of progesterone. Estrogen delays the loss of bone. It doesn't build bone, but progesterone seems to act right on the bone-building cells in the bones. And it actually, you know, Dr. Lee did a bunch of studies with his own patients, and he had an extraordinary increase in bone mass with women using natural progesterone cream transdermally. So it's really quite extraordinary, and it even changes the way calcium uptake is. So, you know, again, prudent diet, balancing your foods, eating whole foods, not eating a lot of sugar, taking garlic and things like that to avoid the danger of estrogens. But the two of them together do help, but it's the progesterone that really works for building bone. But you always want to take hormones in concert with each other. You don't want to, if you need both, you should take both, is what I'm saying.
Great.
Okay.
Let's see, and this is something that we discussed in Dr. Wright's book.
It's in Dr. Wright's book, yes, and that's called Natural Hormone Replacement by Smart Publications.
Smart.
Yeah, actually, let me give out the number for Smart Publications. It's 1-800-543-3873. Again, to get a hold of this book, it's 1-800-543-3873.
Yeah, thank you very much.
You're very welcome. Let's try to get some more callers on the line. Do we have another caller on the line? Go ahead, please.
Yes, hello?
Hi.
Hi. My name is Anne also, and I have a message if Anne in Emeryville is still listening.
Okay.
I had a similar situation, except that I was never on Premarin. Triestrogen will probably work for the hot flashes. It took about a month for me, and it reduced them beautifully at 2 mL of estriol and 0.125 each of estradiol and estrone.
Okay, that's an individual triestrogen cream, and people can try different things. The thing that's important here is that it's true. If somebody is taking estrogen and progesterone, they just sort of go cold turkey,
mm-hmm.
you're going to have symptoms, and you're going to need to do it slowly and sort of bring
yes.
something up.
And
but
they need to pay attention to it because it can lead to
oh,
a
yes.
lot of other problems. She shouldn't let the hot flashes continue and just try to tough it out.
Well, I'm inclined to agree with you, but there are other things that help with hot flashes. The essential fats, taking primrose oil particularly, with fish oils helps.
Mm.
But you're right. I think if women are hot flashing and they're having trouble, they should use an estrogen replacement. And depending on their history with, you know, again, my feeling is if you have a family history of cancer, it is prudent to try estriol first. Because
yeah.
with a woman 65 years old, like Anne in Emeryville is,
yeah.
Her levels of estrogen are pretty low already. So it's really just a question of getting enough in there to prevent the hot flashes.
Right.
And that,
we don't know her full story.
Yeah. All right.
But her bones are probably at risk.
Yeah, no, you want to, I think, I believe in the replacement. But
and Remifemin, which is black cohosh, did nothing for me.
Right,
either.
No, I know. I think that the hormones are really the way
yeah.
to go. But definitely natural.
And as much estriol as she can manage.
Well, it has to be done prudently as well. It always has to be done in concert with the progesterone and the right amount. So
you
let me.
Prefer micronized progesterone or.
I don't like the micronized. It causes a spike.
Yeah.
Let me move on to some other callers. Thank you for calling.
Bye-bye.
We have, in fact, really lost Dr. Wright, and I really apologize for that. Nobody is quite sure what's going on. We were trying to get back through to him. And suddenly the phone number was hooked up to a modem, so we're not getting through. So I really apologize, but let's continue taking callers. And there's one there who just hung up. Let's get another caller on the line. Are you there? Caller?
Hi.
Yeah.
I have been taking Premarin for almost 25 years after I started taking it after a hysterectomy. And I'm in good health. I don't have any problems. I'm not having any difficult symptoms. But I'm concerned about it, and when I talk to my doctors about it, they always continue to say, well, if you're feeling all right, keep it up. There's no need to change.
Well, I disagree with them, but I also don't want you to be afraid, because being afraid is not very good for your immune system either, as we know. What I would do, though, is that, are you taking Provera as well?
No.
Okay. Well, I would want you to get on some natural progesterone really fast, because it means that you've been sort of bathing your tissues in estrogen unopposed for a while, so I'd want you to get the natural progesterone cream right away. I personally think it's worth looking at the brand called Progest, or Emerita, I think is the way the company is called, Transitions for Health. That's a brand that I feel confident about because I know how much is in there. There are various brands out there, but I would urge you to do that first, and then I would see a doctor and get prescribed some natural estrogen, either the triestrogen cream, depending on what makes you feel good. But I wouldn't ignore the research that's out there. I think it's very compelling, and I've been reading a lot of it.
All right, thanks.
You're very welcome. Good luck. Let's get another caller on the line. Do we have another caller? Caller, go ahead, please.
Yeah, hi. My
hi.
Name is Caitlin, and I'm calling because I'm listening to your talk show, and I think it's a very important issue that needs to be addressed. The reason for my call is I work for a pharmaceutical company that actually manufactures a natural estrogen, 17-beta-estradiol, called Climera. I don't know if you've ever heard of it.
Well, my problem with this is that you're saying it is a natural formula.
It's actually.
But it's estradiol, and what we've been hearing about estradiol is that it is the most tumor-promoting. So what I think I would personally prefer to see people do is do a tri-cream that, you know, is closer to what we do in our bodies, or estriol.
Right. Now, as far as I was also listening to the, I guess it was Dr. Wright, and
yes.
talking about transdermal, excuse me, I'm a little nervous, but my question is, as far as what your feeling is, or your belief is that estriol is actually better than estradiol?
Well, not entirely. Yes, well, this is what I'm saying. Instead of talking about better and worse, let's talk about it in another way.
Okay.
Estradiol and estrone, which are two of the other estrogens that our body produces naturally,
right.
are produced in lower quantities than estriol.
Right.
Estriol is the highest percentage in our body.
Okay.
All of the studies that have been done show that while estradiol can, because of what I was explaining during the show, can metabolize in a way that is that can cause mutations in the DNA. It doesn't have, you know, not everybody gets cancer, okay?
Right.
But it does seem to happen, and it happens from estradiol. When you take estriol, it changes the equation. Estriol is not able to form a metabolite. It doesn't go to a catechol. So it doesn't do that. It doesn't cause a DNA mutation. So it's safer. Now, that said, not all women have relief of symptoms taking estriol by itself.
Okay.
So the next step then is to look at whether or not they should be taking a triestrogen cream, but wouldn't it be prudent then to use one with only 10% estradiol in it and 80% of the estriol?
Well, it's interesting because I don't know if you've ever heard of it. There's a physician, and she specializes in hormone therapy. Her name's Dr. Elizabeth Vliet.
Well, I'm trying not to do a whole bunch of specific recommendations
right.
on the air because I'm not in a position to do that. Also, I have to tell you we're running out of time,
okay.
So very quickly.
Very quickly. Anyway, I just went to a talk that she gave, and she talks about the most important biological estrogen, which is 17-beta, and essentially, she's a big.
You know what? We're out of time, and we're also promoting something I don't know.
No, I know. What I find to be very interesting is just there's.
Well, get a hold of Dr. Wright's book. You might want to peruse it for yourself. You know, if you're interested in this topic. So again, it's Natural Hormone Replacement by Dr. Jonathan Wright, M.D., and John Morgenthaler. It's Smart Publications, and they are at 1-800-543-3873. 1-800-543-3873.